From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
It's river eel season on the Kuskokwim River. And as KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports, subsistence fishermen are lining up to catch their fill.
For over a week, Tuluksac resident and subsistence fisherman Nikolai Napolka has been traveling 4 miles down the Kuskokwim River. Sometimes he goes by himself, other times with his friends, but he always has an ice pick at the ready to carve rectangular blocks out of the ice. Once he's got a hole, he uses a 4-foot stick with a bunch of nails at the end as an eel rake.
We've been going out at least a week of doing it, and that's the longest run. And I had another phone call that Kuiklik was dipping last night. So that probably the second run is about to reach here.
He says right now they're more active in the evenings, and they've been running for several days.
A run means it's usually previous years we've been dipping only 2 days and they're all gone. Mm-hmm. And they just pass, but this is the longest run we've been dipping this year.
These river eels, also known as Arctic lamprey, are headed upriver.
And then they just kind of hang out and wait until spring arrives and water warms up and then move in and spawn. And they're like salmon. They're semiparous, so they spawn after they die.
That's Trent Sutton. He's a fisheries biology professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says it's not clear how long these river eels' runs will last. Usually, scientists rely on data from another river.
Most of what I know about Arctic lamprey is based on this sort of activity that takes place in the Yukon River, because the activity in the Kuskokwim is a subsistence fishery, and the Yukon is a combination of both a subsistence and a commercial fishery. And so there's quite a bit more data available and information on that.
Nikolai Napolka says subsistence can mean a lot of things. For instance, providing for elders.
If elderly people, because back then they used to eat them, so we just give them some away. So then, bring back their memories, what they used to eat when they were younger.
But that's not all.
I mostly hear people just snacking them, because they're rich, really rich in fat. Even if you fry them or bake them, the oil will seep out, a lot of oil, because you gotta dip the oil off of it when you're cooking them. I like them more baked than fried. There's a lot of ways that people that cooks them. Mm-hmm. But I like them more baked. We cut them up and store them and put them in Ziploc and freeze them up. Some with a lot of dogs, because they have lots of protein, lots of fat. They've been dipping them for their dogs for this winter.
Basically, he doesn't expect this bumper run to go to waste. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez-Cuello.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
There were no fatalities within Alaska's commercial fishing fleets this year, for only the second time on record. And as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, the U.S. Coast Guard says the credit belongs to the fishermen themselves.
For the first time since 2015, Alaska has gone a year without a commercial fishing death. The Coast Guard says in the 12-month period that ended September 30th, no one died falling overboard in an on-deck accident or on a sinking ship. Scott Wilwert is the Coast Guard's Commercial Fishing Vessel Safety Coordinator. He says fatalities have been cut almost in half over the last decade.
You know, from 1990 to 1999, we had 210 what we would classify as operational commercial fishing fatalities in Alaska. And in the 10-year period from 2000 to 2009, that dropped from 210 to 107. And then from 2010 to 2019, down to 62.
Wilwert says there have been just 10 commercial fishing deaths in Alaska since 2020.
So, yeah, we definitely are seeing a downward decreasing trend in the number of commercial operational fatalities in the industry.
But what exactly is causing that downward shift? Wilwert says it's a combination of changing fishery regulations and an industry culture focused on preventing accidents.
I believe that, you know, the fishermen that I come in contact with and all our examiners come in contact with are much more safety conscious. They understand the risks. They take the preparations, and that's a big piece of the puzzle.
Wilwert says that's a sharp contrast to the 70s and 80s, when short openings encouraged captains to fish in an all-out sprint, sometimes sacrificing safety.
The way that fishermen now in certain sectors are able to some extent, choose when they want to go out, maybe skip a weather window or look for a better weather window, as opposed to the old Derby days when, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when, overloading or deck loading with fish or overloading with gear because you only had 4 or 6 or 8 days to catch all the crab or the halibut or whatever.
Wilwert emphasized how important it is for mariners to stay up to date on safety recommendations and equipment and to take part in the dockside exams offered by the Coast Guard before it's too late.
The time to learn how to use any of that stuff is not at the moment of truth.
Tracy Welch is the executive director of United Fishermen of Alaska.
We're a big industry, but in a way we're a really small industry. Everybody knows somebody who knows somebody, right? And so those deaths are tragic.
Welch says she also thinks things have changed over the last few decades when it comes to education.
I think with the younger generation of fishermen coming in and moving towards more rationalized fisheries as opposed to the Derby-style fisheries, it's given people a chance to focus on safety and making sure that people make it home at the end of the day.
Welch says she hopes the trend continues. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The wreck of its processing barge in Bristol Bay 2 years ago could have been the end of the newly formed Northline Seafoods, but the Sitka-based operation is planning a comeback in a big way. On Wednesday, Northline announced it had received a $40 million food supply chain loan to not only rebuild its floating processor, but also to reinvent the industry in the bay. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The pictures from the wreck of Northline's SN3 processing barge are not pretty. The 150-foot vessel began service in southeast Alaska as a platform for helicopter logging with an upper deck originally designed for aircraft. That superstructure collapsed when the SN3's anchor buoy parted in a September gale in 2020, and 80-mile-per-hour winds blew it ashore in Bristol Bay, not far from Eacook. The 6 crew aboard escaped unharmed, but the $7 million barge was a crumpled pile of twisted metal and in the hands of salvagers and insurance agents. Northline CEO Ben Blakey says the loss of the SN3 was also a turning point and a chance to rethink the company's model, which is to have a floating processor available closer to the fleet and spare them the long run from the fishing grounds to shore-based processors in Naknek. The SN3 was innovative, but it wasn't perfect.
we had to ship using the traditional methods of freeze containers. You know, that increases cost. It's very inefficient. And, you know, there's snags and snarls along, you know, along the path from Alaska to Seattle. So this new barge will actually integrate the freezing process, you know, buying fish from fishermen, freezing them. We'll store them on board and then ship the entire vessel or tow the entire vessel to the Pacific Northwest in the winter months where they'll be distributed. So it's kind of a way to, you know, cut out cold storage, cut out shipping, and kind of take it all in-house and consolidate it.
With $40 million now in hand from a U.S. Department of Agriculture food supply chain loan, plus another $22 million in financing from a company called Greater Commercial Lending and a Seattle investment banking firm, Zachary Scott, Northline is literally doing what President Biden's infrastructure bill suggests and building back better, or at least bigger. The new processor, the HANA, will be three times larger than the SN3, but like its predecessor, the HANA will also be a repurposed vessel, in this case, a massive container barge.
It had been shipping containers between, I believe, Florida and the U.S. Virgin Islands. So it's older. It was built in the late 90s, but it has a lot of life left, and it's large. It's, you know, 400 feet by 100 feet wide, which is substantially larger than the last barge that we rebuilt.
Blakey says that even before the SN3 was wrecked, Northline was looking for ways to improve its model of flash freezing fish in the round and shipping them directly to markets for processing. Initially, the idea was to build another barge for storage and shipping to tie alongside the SN3. After the accident, Blakey credits the company's chief technical officer, Drew Cohen, for coming up with the all-in-one concept behind the HANA. Northline believes that doing more with less is a winning formula for the industry.
It's certainly a question of efficiency. So the original platform was designed to operate with a smaller labor footprint, which we did. So we were able to freeze a couple hundred thousand pounds a day with a fraction of what you would typically use to do, you know, to freeze 200,000 pounds a day of headed and gutted fish. So we're incorporating that, but then in addition, this platform is different in that since we're adding in the shipping component and the storage component, we're kind of expanding our savings and, you know, hope to use those savings to, you know, both improve the market and quality, but also, you know, pay fishermen a better price.
The HANA is being towed from the Gulf of Mexico to Bellingham, and construction will begin in January. The vessel will house about 75 processors and engineers, but most of its volume, 80%, will be cold storage. Once on the grounds, the HANA will hold 14 million pounds of Bristol Bay sockeye, an awesome tribute for whoever the real HANA is.
It's not the name of my wife or anyone else's wife that I'm aware of, but it is a name that's important to one of our investors, and also, as I understand it, it was the name of the first ship in the U.S. Navy, commissioned in the late 1700s.
Although the HANA will be built in Bellingham, Blakey says that Northline's offices and brain trust will remain in Sitka. The company plans to have the barge ready to enter service for the 2024 fishing season. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.